Radio Prague News.
The Justice Ministry has proposed wide-ranging legislation regarding the rights of victims of criminal acts. President Václav Klaus has issued 8 pardons on humanitarian grounds, and healthcare unions will use theater to protest government reforms on Tuesday. Justice Minister Jiří Pospíšil has put forward a wide-ranging bill regarding the rights of victims of criminal acts. The legislation is intended, among other things, to give victims the explicit right to financial aid, which was previously possible only in cases of injury or death. Victims of sexually motivated crimes would be able to apply for basic immediate damages for the first time. According to the bill, victims would have the right to be dealt with by the authorities on an individual basis and to receive more information on the course of judicial cases and investigations involving them. The Justice Ministry also wants to increase the involvement of NGOs in aiding victims with the use of state funds. Mr. Pospíšil says that the bill would bring victims' rights into line with those in Germany and Switzerland, where similar laws are already in place. President Václav Klaus issued 8 pardons on humanitarian grounds on Monday. The president's spokesman says that the pardoned offenders were mostly either caring for their children, had health problems, or were of advanced age. 3 of the cases involved failures to pay alimonies, others fraud or minor offenses. A Brno physician convicted to 7 years for falsifying medical reports had her sentence waived due to previous good behavior and a poor psychological condition. In other cases, the president commuted prison sentences to community service so that the offenders could work to repay their debts. Healthcare unions will be holding a demonstration in front of the Ministry of Health on Tuesday to protest government reforms. The organizers intend to use pantomime and theatrical performances to show what healthcare will look like if the reforms are implemented and then set out on a march across Prague. The protest is timed to coincide with the first day of parliamentary debate on the reforms. The unions are primarily opposed to the establishment of standard and above-standard medical care, increased hospital fees, and the lack of a broader consensus on reforms between the government on the one hand and the opposition and specialists on the other. The Ministry of the Interior is considering ways to monitor the treasuries of political parties and movements more effectively. On Wednesday, the government is to discuss a ministry analysis for the potential establishment of an independent supervisory board, or possibly the extension of the purview of the Supreme Audit Office. The analysis also suggests other measures, such as requiring parties to have separate transparent accounts for campaign financing and more detailed annual financial statements. The ministry is also calling for increased fines for violations of parties' financial regulations. Now turning briefly to the weather, currently cloudy and cool conditions are expected to improve on Tuesday, with clearer skies and highs of around 24 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Sarah Barufka. Coming up in today's program, the D1 highway, which was constructed 40 years ago, will be undergoing massive reconstruction in the coming decade. And we have all the latest sports news. And in our one-on-one program this week, we meet Edna Feinaru, a seasoned journalist who served on this year's main jury at the Karlo Vivari International Film Festival.
There are so many students and so many people who are really devoting this week to watching films day and night, and they are the best public you can ask for.
All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. This Tuesday marks the 40th anniversary of the opening of the first section of the Czech Republic's busiest highway, the D1. However, the road, which sees scores of fatal accidents every year, is in a poor state of repair and will have to undergo massive reconstruction over the coming decade. As the D1 is the country's main east-west motorway, diverting traffic in that period will cause huge logistical headaches and serious safety risks. I discussed the problems that lie ahead with road safety expert Robert Šťastný.
Highway D1 is the oldest highway in Czech Republic and the main important because it ensures west-east connection, not connection only between Prague and Brno, and Bohemia and Moravia, but also from Eastern Europe and West Europe, also South Europe and West Europe. So important not only for Czech transport, but also Europe transport. And of course, because of age, it's a 40 years old highway. Of course, the quality of surface is not so good, and this highway needs to be repaired and reconstructed.
And maybe you could describe the extent of the repairs and the reconstruction necessary to make this a safe and state-of-the-art highway again.
I think the main problem is that the material. The highway is very old and nobody knows what problem can occur in the near future. For example, this summer was a problem that some blocks was moving and creating big troubles for cars and also for safety. So there is a plan to totally reconstruct this highway, of course, in maybe 10 years. So it will be very big reconstruction.
How do you think will the traffic be affected during these repairs? And do you think it will be a security issue at all while the highway is being reconstructed?
Everybody is afraid because, as I said, there is only one east-west connection by highway. We haven't any other subsidiary highway in this direction. Every construction on the highway will cause problems of maybe jams, congestions, and also it has also effect to safety. So we will see how it will be managed, so how long will be this reconstruction part, and how much traffic lines will be ensured in this direction. For example, it's a bit interesting that in morning you need good connection from Brno to Prague, and afternoon you need good connection from Prague to Brno. So maybe if the management will be able to change a number of lines by daytime, we will see. So also for traffic police, it will be a very demanding job to ensure discipline and good behavior, because discipline will be very important.
And you mentioned discipline and speeding. I believe that the D1 is notorious for reckless drivers. And I wanted to see if you have any idea whether this far-reaching reconstruction in some way could also improve road security, I don't know, by adding monitoring devices, cameras, and so on, or if that is something that will not be solved by a reconstruction.
I would expect it, because by reconstruction you have chance to fulfill some infrastructure about, for example, data cables and special observing devices. So I think it's a big challenge to also do this. And I think these devices also would help to safety on a highway, not only normal conditions, but especially during this reconstruction time. So it would be a good idea, and I hope it will be done.
That was road safety security expert Robert Šťastný talking there about security issues linked to the reconstruction of the D1 motorway. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. And now it is time for the sports news with Jan Richter.
Czech cyclist Roman Kreuziger's outlooks in this year's Tour de France are uncertain following a wrist injury he suffered in the Tour's seventh stage on Friday. Some 50 kilometers before the finish, the 25-year-old Astana rider got involved in a mass crash And although he managed to finish the stage in 149th position, his swollen wrist made it difficult for him to steer his bike properly. In Sunday's ninth stage, Kreuziger finished 120th, and in 113th overall position, loses over 40 minutes to the leader, Thomas Fekler from France. Roman Kreuziger said he was going to consult his doctors over his injury on Monday, a day of rest at Tour de France. But even if he continues, the Czech rider lost practically any chance of finishing within the top 10 riders overall, a standing he achieved in the previous two tours. A streak of bad luck continued for Czech motorcycle rider Jakub Smrš at Brno's round of the World Superbike Championships over the weekend. In Sunday's race 1, Smrš had a good start, but his Ducati did not do well on the hot track, and he finished 11th. In Sunday's second race, the Czech rider fell in the 13th lap and did not finish at all. The 20-year-old member of the Czech-Italian team Liberty Racing now ranks 12th in the championship's overall standings. Brno was never his favorite circuit, although he did well in Friday's qualification, in which he finished 5th. After the race, Jakub Smrš was sorry he didn't do better in the race.
Friday and Saturday were really great, but today we did what we could. I made some mistakes, but there was also a problem with engine settings. The heat was also not good for us at all. In fact, the bike lost some of its power because of it.
Turning to football now, where Czech champions Viktoria Plzeň begins its bid to reach the Champions League. The first time Czech league winners left on Monday for the Armenian capital of Yerevan, where they'll face the local champions Punic in the first leg of the Champions League second qualifying round. The Czech side did not know much about their opponents, but Plzeň captain Pavel Horvát said the weather forecast was favorable for the Czechs.
In my experience, it's always better to start with the away game. From what I saw on the internet, it should be 33 degrees Celsius there with rain, which I hope could be an advantage for us.
The second leg is scheduled for Tuesday, the 19th of July in Plzeň. However, Victoria Stadium is undergoing a major renovation, which means only the arena's main stand will be open for fans. And finally, Czech Wimbledon champion Petra Kvitová was given a Queen's welcome in her hometown of Fulnek in the northeast of the country on Friday. After meeting with Czech President Václav Klaus the day before, himself a big tennis fan, the 20-year-old rising star arrived on the main square of her hometown in a white convertible to the cheers of some 1,500 people. Ascending a stage erected in front of the town hall, Petra Kvitová was greeted by church bells and given the freedom of the city as the second person in the town's history after the 17th-century educator Jan Amos Komenský. The Wimbledon champion told Czech radio about her future plans.
Next week I'll be going to the Tatra Mountains for some fitness training, so I won't be getting much rest. But I've been doing fine, although all the celebrations are exhausting. I would rather play tennis, but it's the price of success and I accept it as such.
Following her Wimbledon win, Petra Kvitová has moved up one position to reach the 7th place in the WTA rankings, the highest she has ever been in the course of her career.
Thanks for that, Jan. On Saturday evening, the 46th edition of the Carlo Vivari International Film Festival wrapped up and this year's winners were announced, among them the Israeli movie Restoration, directed by Yosef Madmoni. As a member of this year's main competition jury, seasoned Israeli journalist Edna Feinaru was one of those who picked the winning submission. For this week's one-on-one, I caught up with her in the West Bohemian spa town and asked her about her experiences at film festivals all over the world, her take on the Carlo Vivari Festival, and if she still finds time to visit the theater, a subject which she studied in Tel Aviv after devoting her life to film.
Tell you the truth, once you're interested in cinema, You have to be interested in all the other art forms, because cinema actually unites in a very magical way all the other art forms. Theater, music, dance, everything is there. But I still find the time, and I think everybody says that the most, let's say, the busiest person is the one that has most of the time. So you can always find time for things you love.
And so after studying theater and philosophy, how did you then become interested in journalism, and how did your career in journalism begin?
Well, it actually began very quickly after studies, because I went to London and I was working for the what they then called the Hebrew Hour of the BBC, which was a special program directed to countries then behind the Iron Curtain. And that's how I started my career, and it was already after doing 2 years in the military radio that was like a pirate radio for everything, which had music and programs on cinema. And in this very, I would say, kind of pioneer radio station in Israel, we started, my husband and me, then we were just friends going together to the cinema, our cinema program and the program dedicated to singers from Paris, because it was the high time of Jacques Brel and Catherine Sauvage and Juliette Gréco and all these wonderful singers. So I actually started from there.
And I believe in your time as a journalist during your career, you've interviewed some very well-known, very famous people. Sidney Pollack comes to mind. What is it like interviewing someone who is so famous? And is the preparation for an interview like that different from interviewing someone who's maybe not as well-known?
The question of being famous is not what really counts, but it's more like what is the quality of the performance of the artist, which means, is he a director, is he an actor, what do you know about him, and what's his past, and what is actually interesting for him to talk about. And once you catch the interesting point for him, you can break all walls. And Sidney Pollack, by the way, it's a very good example, because Sidney Pollack was also very famous, and he was a wonderful actor on top of being a director and a producer. But he was very easy to talk to, and he would answer any question you would ask him.
And you've worked in both print and radio. May I just ask you which one you prefer?
They say that you always go back to your first love, and my first love is and will remain the radio. I think it's a very warm medium, in contrast to television, which for me is very cold. And I love the intimate connection that you have through the radio with your listener. So I will always love radio work the best.
And I believe you also write for Screen International. Maybe you could describe the kind of articles you write for them and how you find that work.
Screen International is what you call trade paper, but it's a very accessible trade paper. I mean, everybody can find something which is interesting for him to know about what they call the industry. I would call it the art of cinema. For me, the articles I write for them are not reviews, but usually they are, let's say, general analysis of a certain cinema, like the Turkish cinema, like the Israeli cinema, and news stories which has to do with producing films.
And you and your husband also founded the only domestic cinema magazine, Cinematek. Can you tell me about that project and how it's kind of started and where it is now?
It's true, that's the only cinema publication in Israel. It started a long time ago because we were collaborating then on the radio program, and we had a group of friends that were very dedicated to film. and we decided that we need a publication to express opinions and also to help young students to know more about film, things that they can't find in the daily paper. So it's a labor of love. Of course, it's always a problem to find the money, but the Israeli Tel Aviv Cinematheque is supporting us. And we reached the 170 issue, and we're very proud of that.
Great, that sounds wonderful. And so in your long career as a journalist, in your multifaceted career, is there any memories that stand out a lot or any nice experience that you had interviewing people or meeting people?
I think that it's very difficult to point one because every time there is another, let's say, meeting or experience that comes to mind. What can I say? I think that one of my very emotional experiences was to meet Kurosawa, because I don't know why, I never imagined that the guy is so tall, and he was really a very tall man. And we had a wonderful meeting, of course in Japanese with a translator, but I have to say that at the end I couldn't find words, so I just hugged him. And I think it's one of the nicest memories that I have of this, you know, very long line of interviews.
And so now let's talk about Carlo Vivari. You are here working on the jury. How difficult do you find it to judge films? And what's the experience like? What's the process like?
Well, I have to say that I don't find it difficult at all, because I'm looking at the films with the same eyes that I always look at films. I would say the first feeling is love, so I enjoy seeing everything. Then comes the opposite, which is, I would say, if you don't enjoy the film, you really suffer. But you develop, you know, a certain technique that enables you to see one film after the other and to separate between them, to treat them differently. I don't find it difficult at all, because usually when I go to festival, I try to see as many films that I can. And I have this possibility to watch a lot of films a day that maybe other jury members are not used to. So I have it the easiest way, I think. And also I have to say that this jury, and I served before in juries, is very pleasant to be with, because half of them at least are my friends from years ago. I can allow saying that Istvan Szabo, the president, whom I interviewed so many times, that he always tells me, why don't you give the answers yourself? And then it's this wonderful French critic, Michel Simon, who is, again, an editor of a paper, so we have a common language. And then Michel Demopoulos, who is, you know, a longtime friend from Greece, who used to be a festival director himself. And the other people are very pleasant, so I think we are very spoiled here, and people take care of us, which, to tell you the truth, is not so new to me, because whenever I came to Carlo Vivari, even as a journalist, they took very good care of me. So I enjoy the benefits, and I have fun watching all these films.
And I believe you're a veritable pro. You visit so many film festivals, so maybe you can tell me what sets Carlo Vivari apart or what's special about this festival.
First of all, it's a very big festival that always gives you the feeling of intimacy. And I think it starts with the people. I think the fact that there are so many students and so many people who are really devoting this week to watching films day and night, and they are the best public you can ask for. And it's contagious. I mean, when you are with a loving audience and with open-minded audience, it gets you too. I mean, you are also involved and caring, and it gives you a kind of energy that very few festivals do today.
And is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to in this week or so that this festival is going to be running?
I'm looking for the program of Sam Fuller's films that I always loved, and I would like to find the time to see a few of them. And I have to say that they are all kind of chef-d'oeuvre and really old films, renovated, that are showing here. And I would love to catch up with things that I haven't seen at the time.
And lastly, after you return home from the festival, do you have any projects, any plans?
Well, I would say it's going to be the summer carnival of festivals, because there are so many, one after the other, that we are going to attend, very different ones. The next one, which is close to my heart and close to home, is Jerusalem, that starts very soon, even this week. And then there is the festival in Locarno and Sarajevo, and then there is Venice, which we are very curious to see how it comes out this year. And so on and so forth. So it goes on.
Edna Feinerruh spoke to me for this week's edition of One on One. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with Soundcheck, our Czech language learning program brought to you this time by Ruth Frankova.
Welcome to a fresh edition of Soundcheck, Radio Prague's Czech language series, in which you can learn new phrases with the help of song lyrics. Today's topic is sleep, and the song we are going to listen to is a popular lullaby by Petr Skoumal called Když jde malý bobr spát, When a Little Beaver Goes to Bed.
Když jde malý bobr spát, bobr spát, bobr spát, tak si chvilku hraje rád, hraje rád, hraje rád. Postaví se na zadní, na zadní, na zadní, jednom bobře nespadní.
The song describes how a little beaver gets ready to go to bed. He plays for a while, then he drinks a glass of milk, washes his ears, and brushes both his right and left tooth. Soon after, he is fast asleep, or as we say in Czech, spí jako dub, a phrase which literally translates as he is sleeping like an oak. Notice that the phrase uses the verb spinka instead of spí, which is what little children or their mothers would say.
A už spinká jako dub, prosím vás, buďte.
There are many other ways of saying that someone is sound asleep. The closest translation would be tvrdě spí, but we can also say spí jako dřevo, he's sleeping like a log, spí jako by ho do vody hodil, he is sleeping as if thrown into water, or spí jako zabitý, he is sleeping as if he'd been killed. The song ends with an appeal to children. Please do just like the little beaver and march off to bed. Pochodujte do hajan, a phrase that could be translated as hit the sack or hit the hay. The word hajany is derived from the verb hajat, a child's way of saying to sleep. We also commonly use the idiom jít na kutě, though no one really knows what kutě means, and no dictionary seems to offer a clear explanation. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for in this edition of Soundcheck. I hope I haven't put you to sleep. Thanks for listening and naschledanou.
Když jde malý bobr spát, bobr spát, bobr spát, tak si chvilku hraje rád, hraje rád, hraje rád. Postaví se na zadní, na zadní, na zadní, jednom bobře nespadní, jednom nespadní.
Ruth Frankova with Soundcheck wrapped up Radio Prague's English show for today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Barufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you for listening and goodbye.